Learn from today's most innovative brands and observe how they empower employees, engage consumers, design products, and co-create experiences together. Welcome to the Brand Lab series from AE Marketing Group.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Walker. We're excited to have you with us. This is episode 25 of the Brand Lab series podcast, broadcasting each week from 1871, where we explore today's most innovative brands alongside today's most insightful executives and entrepreneurs. This week, we're talking with Russ Klein. Russ is the CEO of the American Marketing Association, and we'll be talking about how to teach marketers how to market in the digital age. And with that said, let's enter the Brand Lab. So I'm super excited to have Russ Klein with us, extremely well known for his contributions to the marketing and the advertising community for many, many years. Russ has worked both on the agency side as well as the client side, led teams on such famous brands as Gatorade, McDonald's, Dr. Pepper, 7-Eleven, Burger King, and many more. He's also been in senior leadership positions at Leo Burnett and Footcone and Belding. And now for the last 2 years, he's been the CEO of the American Marketing Association. So good morning, Russ. Welcome to the Brand Lab series. Welcome to 1871 Chicago.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate the invitation.
So you have an incredible background. I'm thrilled that you could join us. You're doing a lot of great things over at the AMA. And I'd like to talk first and foremost about the role and responsibility of the American Marketing Association in helping teach marketers in such a competitive but exciting phase of our economy.
That's a great question. Thank you. Well, we think of our mission to be of service to the individual marketer, much like the way I describe Nike is to the individual athlete, versus governing bodies, team owners, league officials. You can always rely on Nike to default to the individual athlete. And of course, there have been times in their past where even embroiled in controversy, Nike, out of reflex, will set up a defense fund for an individual athlete. And as a result of that, athletes know that Nike has their back. Our vision is to have that same connection, that same emotional connection, that same devotion to the individual marketer, who will, over the course of their career, work for many brands, many different corporations. But lifelong, we want them to see the AMA as someone who has their back throughout their professional development.
Great. And speaking about working on many brands throughout their lifetime, you've worked on some blockbuster brands. It kind of reads as a who's who. So you have a lot of deep experience over many years. So talk about what you think personally are some of the hardest challenges facing marketers today.
Well, the marketers expect three things, certainly from the American Marketing Association. They want us to untangle the mess, to make sense of all the noise out there, give them the tools to solve real problems that they have in their enterprises. They want us to show them what's next out there, because again, what's next is often more important than what we think is best right now. And then the third piece is to help marketers guide to their purpose and their destiny in their profession as marketers. If we do those three things, we know that we'll be fulfilling our mission to marketers, because they have just a sea of change, rapid change that's going on right now like never before.
And can you expand upon that just a little bit? So I've had the opportunity to both speak at some AMA events and attend some AMA events. So for those who are listening that haven't had the opportunity yet to attend an American Marketing Association conference or event, what are some things that they will expect?
Well, for now, we hope that they will experience smarter, more useful answers to real issues. The AMA released the first intellectual agenda in our almost 80-year history. We call it Intellectual Agenda 1.0. It's anchored by what we call the seven big problems, which was developed with a task force of leading academics and practitioners around what are the enduring issues for the next 3 to 5 years that matter for marketers against which the AMA and frankly all marketing knowledge enterprises should be exploring, researching, creating content for. And we're using the intellectual agenda and the seven big problems to inform the programming of a typical AMA conference experience or even an online experience. So right now, I hope that an AMA guest or member will start to see smarter, more focused content from us. Down the line, we are in the process of a transformation ourselves, and that involves taking assets like AMA.org and what we call a digital physical fusion, taking AMA.org and our virtual assets and fusing them with our physical assets, our live conferences, our live training, our chapter events, and creating a seamless customer experience of which AMA.org is the hub. We call that the marketplace. And again, we think that's going to be a much more dynamic environment for marketers to not only stay connected to what matters in marketing, but to also be connected with one another, because co-creation and collaboration now in the community is such a critical method for growth.
That's great. And talk a little bit about that. So you mentioned the big seven on your list. Is there something on there that really scares Russ?
Well, scares me, no, because I think that identifying the things we need to know more about shouldn't be ominous or forbidding. But there is no question that the seven big problems present a whole set of questions that I certainly don't know the answer to, or I don't have the answers. And that's what the intellectual agenda is meant to do. It's meant to provoke work, provoke thinking, provoke discussion around these questions, and hopefully attract a convergence of the best minds so that we can actually say that we have brought the right thinking to bear on those issues. There are a couple, such as problem number three, which is about the digital transformation of the modern corporation, which certainly would represent what I think is a vast and still changing and unknown world. And problem number five is about dealing in an omni-channel world. And so those two are probably the most ambiguous problems, if you will. Those are two of the seven problems that probably for more experienced marketers who perhaps been in the industry for maybe 15, 20 years are now thinking they have to go back and sort of retrace their own knowledge agenda to make sure they're not being left behind on how to compete in those kinds of worlds.
That's a great point, and it kind of leads to another question that I have. What's so fascinating about the marketing industry is obviously you have so many different brands across so many different industries, but you also have such a wealth of skill levels. You have junior level marketers that might just be getting started coming out of undergraduate school or from another job. You also have very seasoned executives all the way up into the C-suite. So how does the AMA kind of balance the programming? That's got to be a big challenge for you. How do you balance the programming to make sure you're relevant to all those audiences and kind of bridge that gap between junior level marketers and the C-suite?
Yes, that's a great question. Well, if you recall, you know, my original point on our devotion to the individual marketer throughout their career is about really sticking with marketers from their collegiate experience. The AMA has 11,000 collegiate AMA members across 355 chapters across North America. Those collegiate marketing hopefuls, of course, then move to become what we call enlightened initiates, who, let's say, have 0 to 10 years of experience. They move into another phase we call marketing maestros that maybe takes the next 15 years of their career. And then after that, they become what we call seasoned veterans. And so we believe we have a good sense of the knowledge journey that accompanies each of those stages throughout a marketer's career. And it's the job of our content team and our experience team to make sure that we're creating bundles of benefits, tools, resources that are focused on each of those, if you will, career stages for the marketer.
And talk about your role then transitioning through. You've worn a lot of hats, including several CMO hats. Talk about transitioning from corporate branding into the association world. What was that step like for you?
Well, I think, first off, when I was contacted about the job, I have to tell you that my immediate answer was, I would love to do that. And I was at the time looking at sort of what would be my next CMO adventure. I had some CEO opportunities with smaller enterprises as well. And when this phone call came, for me, it represented a nexus of my credentials in marketing, my love of teachable moments that I've always cherished along the way as a manager, my love of learning myself as a lifelong student. And I felt like this was an opportunity to step into what is the definitive organization representing the marketer out there and reconstituting it to compete for the next 80 years. Because I think, the market has moved very quickly all around it. Online learning, the explosion of social and digital, I think caught the AMA a little flat-footed at one point. And so the opportunity to come in and wake up the organization, refocus the organization around what matters going forward, that was a challenge that I just thought would be an awesome opportunity, and I wanted to be part of it. I think what I've learned now coming into it is there's nothing, quote, easy about a not-for-profit environment. For those who think that somehow signals, well, it must be a little sort of more relaxed around there and so forth, it's quite the contrary. You know, we're really all about being relevant and competitive, knowing that we have for-profit competitors as well as not-for-profit competitors out there who are competing for the time and money of marketers who need to know that they're getting the right answers and the right tools to be effective in their jobs. So we have to have a performance organization, right, that has got that kind of mentality. And I think I've learned that it takes somewhat longer to get things done in our environment. Part of what the magic of the AMA is that it's powered by a lot of volunteer leaders. While we have a staff here in Chicago that does a great job sort of as the hub of the AMA, the face of the AMA is really the individual marketer out there who is a member or a customer, and then a subset of that group, several thousand marketers out there who really give of their own time to help take the AMA message, the AMA brand, the AMA community, and extend it out into all of North America and around the world, for that matter. So it's a vast, sprawling community, and it's a community that I don't have control over. And so if you're going to move people in that large of a business model with such a big volunteer component, there's only three ways you can move people or change their minds. John Marshall Roberts wrote a book called Igniting Inspiration. You can force people. You can try to persuade people using death by PowerPoint, or you can inspire them. And so for me, the only way out and the only way forward is through inspiration. And that's what my job is the AMA, is to set a vision that is inspiring and that is a vision in which people can see themselves playing a starring role.
I can personally tell you that I've been killed once or twice by PowerPoint. So
yes.
I'm glad you selected the third option there in terms of your leadership style. And it's interesting also, we've had several CEOs or C-level executives for some nonprofits on the Brand Lab series in the past. And you're absolutely right. I think there's a perception that a nonprofit operates in a different way, but they can no longer afford not to operate like a for-profit business in terms of speed, good content, all of those things. Just a couple more questions. We also had Chuck Kent, who is an editor for Branding Magazine, on. He spent 40 years in the advertising business, primarily on the agency side, and he had some really fascinating nuggets about life in early agency days. You've had the opportunity to be on both the client and the agency side, and I know there's often been some push-pull in the industry between agency-client relationships. Which role do you think is harder, leadership in the agency or leadership on the client side?
Well, I love both at different points in time. And I would say the agency environment is the art of responsibility without authority. And the importance of stakeholder management as a skill is one that you can really sharpen as an agency professional. The client side is about authority with accountability. And I think you see developments in the industry now where clients out there are trying to shift more accountability onto the agency side with some of the revisions around compensation agreements and so forth that reflect that direction. In the end of the day, it's really, I hate to say it this in such a simple sense, but to me, it's about who your boss and who your leaders are. And I've worked for some great bosses and great leaders on the agency side and on the client side. And of course, occasionally, not so much. And so careers in either side really, I think, are a function of sort of how you're wired. But also, it's about, you know, identifying leadership and a supervisor, a manager-employee relationship that's satisfying and gratifying. And I've found that if you're a versatile, broad-gauge athlete, you can be successful in either environment.
Great. And just a final question as we wrap up here. So how does a marketer, though, and this is another challenge I think we see often in the industry, how does a marketer demonstrate value to the C-suite today?
Well, I think there are a number of things that are challenges for a marketer at the CMO level. I mentioned the importance of being a broad gauge, a versatile athlete. A CMO needs to be able to read a balance sheet, a cash flow statement, and a P&L. And if you can't, you will have no credibility and no respect in the C-suite. A CMO also needs to be able to coalesce a leadership team around the customer. They're the only ones who have the connectivity to be able to take a cross-functional team in the C-suite and rally them around the customer. And that's their job. And if they can't do that, then they will fail at what they're measured by. And you can say a CMO is responsible for growth. You can say they're responsible for creating demand. You can say that they're responsible for customer satisfaction. But at the end of the day, they typically, in most models, are only responsible for part of the customer experience. And so they need the full cooperation and alignment of their distribution, their retail, their sales force. The ability to deliver a customer experience depends on C-suite alignment, and it's the CMO who's responsible for making that happen. I would also say a CMO adds value by creating the innovation agenda for corporations. If you look back over history, the number one stall point for any organization that usually rises to the top 50, falls out of the top 50, the number one stall point is lack of innovation. And so it's up to that CMO to create an innovation agenda for the organization that is customer-centric, keep that agenda alive, keep it resourced, and that's what I would say is important. And I guess the last piece is a role I know I played as a CMO in past assignments is to be a culture warrior inside the organization. Everybody wants a great culture. Everyone kind of knows a great culture when they feel it, but a CMO can actually play a very active role in the design and the sort of programming necessary for an organization to continue to invest and fortify its cultural values. And the sort of soft skills, the soft touch that a CMO brings to the C-suite is part of what can help them be a successful agent in the culture creation around the organization as well.
So insightful and so helpful, Russ. Thank you so much for being on this episode of the Brand Lab Series podcast.
Thank you, Brian.
I want to thank our listeners for joining us in the Brand Lab today and to invite you back next Tuesday as we continue our journey of today's most innovative brands as we learn how they empower employees, engage consumers, design products, and co-create experiences together. Until next time.
Hi, this is Russ Klein, CEO of the American Marketing Association. I hope you'll check out what's happening at AMA.org called The Marketplace, where you'll find smarter, more useful content, connect with other marketers, find out what's next in the industry, and supercharge your career.
To listen to our other Brand Lab Series podcast episodes, visit iTunes, Google Play, or BrandLabSeries.com. Follow us on Twitter at Brand Lab Series. And if you have any questions or ideas for a future Brand Lab Series podcast, email us at info@BrandLabSeries.com.